I recognize the voice. Okay, so the patient-centered questions, given my personal characteristics, conditions, what should I expect to happen to me? What can I do to improve these? How can clinicians and healthcare delivery systems work to help me? So I just want to really make sure that we are all grounded in what PCORI wants, and want to take a moment to remind everyone of how they're going to review these. These are the review criteria. Impact is so important that in the last round of proposals, and I believe they'll continue to do this, there was a initial science-based review of the proposals, and after they were scored, half of them fell off the table and the others were put forward for impact reviews. And we were trained as impact reviewers, trained poorly I would say, but trained to say, okay, might be good science, but how much of a difference will it make? Very few proposals do a good job of really putting forth what their impact will be. And I'll tell everyone that we're doing, that is the CTSI is doing a couple of hours on value of information as one tool to help this at a forthcoming event that will take place in March led by Roger Lewis. Impact. If it is not strong impact, it is not going to have any chance. Innovation, potential for improvement, impact on healthcare performance, patient-centeredness with capital letters in every part of that, rigorous research methods. No one knows what they mean by that, but Brian is here and he's on the methodology committee and he can tell us all.
I'll tell you what we mean, not what the reviewers necessarily mean.
Okay. And inclusiveness of different populations, the research team and environment, although it's a different set of criteria for a research team and environment evaluation for PCORI than you would see in an NIH grant. And efficient use of research resources. So, you know, I have a number of slides that we're going to make available to everyone, and I was going to go through many of the details. But I think it really would behoove us perhaps to jump forward and talk more about Ken's proposal and then go back to perhaps refreshers about some of these. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to move forward and we'll come back later if we want. By the way, dissemination and implementation assessment is still in these. There is an expectation that there will be a dissemination plan. The dissemination plans I've been reviewing sometimes say we're going to publish the results in a journal, right? Not good enough. And here's the form that I'm staring at right now for my aid grants. You know, criterion number one, what's the impact of the condition on the health of populations? What is the current impact? Is the condition associated with a significant burden in the U.S. population? Use, you know, prevalence, mortality, morbidity, suffering, loss of productivity, although don't touch on costs in this. Impact is extremely important.
So when you said don't touch on costs.
Don't touch on costs.
Because?
Because PCORI is not allowed to evaluate any grants in terms of cost-benefit analysis from the dollar point of view. They were forbidden in the legislation to do so, and at every meeting they continue to say we're still not ready to let anyone go there, and we certainly are not going to fund it. Brian, you
but
want to answer that?
That doesn't necessarily mean that you can't say something about cost in terms of the impact and burden of the condition.
Exactly. That's what I was asking about.
Okay.
It seems like you don't necessarily want to overemphasize it, but it does seem like a quick sentence that, you know, totals the direct and indirect cost might be helpful. Mm-hmm.
The innovation and potential improvement, they say...
Hello?
Can you hear us?
We can hear you on the phone, but not on the webinar.
That's how it should be.
Okay, so
otherwise,
everybody knows to call in for the vocal sound?
Do you want to put it on the webinar? Put up the number again on the side. Okay, Robin will take care of that.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're at innovation. Is it innovative in research in its methods or approach in the populations? Is it likely to change practice? is there a critical gap that has been identified? Do preliminary studies indicate potential for a sizable benefit? And some of the reviews that I'm looking at, there are preliminary data in there. They don't ask for it in a specific section, but it certainly is much more compelling if you have ground under your feet to move forward with this type of proposal than if you're saying, oh, it would be great if we did X. And I'm seeing both of those. Impact on healthcare performance is a criteria that gets its own independent score. Could this lead to improvements in efficiency of care for individual patients or populations?
So that isn't actually a criteria on the methodology RFA.
Okay.
Which, do you know anything about that?
Brian, do you?
No, but it makes sense that the ultimate impact of the methodology grants on performance is so far removed that it shouldn't be assessed.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But that's a guess. I don't know for certain.
And then, just so you're not looking at the same form here, there are 8 criteria in total, patient-centeredness, and these are the reminders for the reviewers as we read these again and again. Is it focused on outcomes of specific interest to patients and caregivers? Why should we believe you that that's the case unless you've spoken to them, unless they've been engaged in this? Does the research address one of the key questions mentioned in the definition? Is there absence of particular important outcomes discussed? And I think it might even be good to design the proposals to provide the answers to these to the reviewers in that type of a structure. Okay, now we're at the rigorous research methods. Do you want to talk about that, Brian, at all?
Read the report. So, again, the issue is to what extent do the reviewers read the report, and to what extent does the report, which is sort of a random selection of methods, it doesn't cover all of the methods that are relevant. I suppose it's to be used as guidance, not necessarily a strict benchmark to assess every element in the design of methods.
So they're emphasizing here that it's an unbiased results, generalizable information, sufficient precision, and reliable for the patients and caregivers. Of course, outcomes that are driven by them. Diverse populations with respect to age, gender, ethnicity, race, geography, or clinical status. And they emphasize again and again, previously understudied populations for whom effectiveness information is needed. What other characteristics are this? So they really want these to differentiate themselves from a study that is going to develop a new hypothesis and test it in a traditional NIH fashion and go to cut to the chase. What's the critical question from the point of view of the patient? And by the way, a patient in the PCORI sense is patient and the patient's family, right, caregivers and so on. Okay, research team, do they have enough integrated research expertise, which wouldn't be demonstrated by one person having a lot of studies and a lot of funding from NIH? Although in Ken's case, you built on a study that was previously funded and they love that. Will the research environment contribute to the possibility of research? This is self-evident. Are institutional and community investments in the success of the research described in the proposal? And then they want efficiency, although there hasn't been any good guidance on efficiency. What seems to ring true is if this is not starting from the ground up and if it is creating something that can be shared as a resource for a broader group, there are positive responses to it. Okay, so here it is, the scores from Dr. Wells' proposal. We tried to make this generic from any substance of the proposal and pulled out some of the comments that you received. But what you all seeing here is a matrix that shows for each of these areas the base.
Are these 1 to 9?
1 to 8.
No,
1
to 8.
1 to 8. Right. From each of these, with 1 being the best. The second review first, the impact review, and then the first review behind it. And so in the second review, we have a primary review with a 2, secondary with a 3, tertiary with a 3. It wasn't ones across the ground. Quaternary they pulled in, it had a review of 3, and then here's the big surprise that...
What's the difference between phase 1 and phase 2?
Yeah.
Phase 1 is the phase in which all of these criteria that we mentioned are evaluated by a broad research a review team that includes scientists and advocates, and it goes through each of these, including the research methods. Phase 2 is just impact. They told me when they asked me to be a phase 2 reviewer, you only need to spend 12 minutes. You don't even have to read the grant. You should read what the other reviewers wrote about it and evaluate.
Okay, so if you make it through phase 1, then you go just for a pure impact review. And
pure
it's a separate
review. Separate review, separate group, later in time.
And they tell you not to read the grant. I mean, we are thrilled that our dear colleague was funded. But what the fuck are they thinking?
And was phase 1, there was a mail round in this case, right? And then in person? Or was that for the previous round? Do you know how the review? All I remember is, and you know, I don't play any role at all in this, but during the board meeting, there was a lot of discussion about the phase 1 versus phase 2 mail in person, and I don't recall the details.
So I don't know. I will be on this round in April. It will be face to face.
So I mean, clearly, Ken, there was in the phase 1 tremendous variability.
Can you all see that? We've got 1 to 6. 6 from a primary, 1 from a tertiary.
And 1 is best?
And 1 is good. 1's excellent.
And it's also interesting that a grant which averaged 3 1/3 of fame made it through to the second round.
Right.
And obviously did well in that round.
Right. I mean, what I can tell you some what I know, yeah. I could also, if we're interested, probably find out more. So they, over the course of their reviews, they've been experiencing a lot of disagreement over what patient-centeredness is, and whether whether it literally means patients or, you know, does community stakeholders count and that sort of thing. And just before this review process, they've sort of made a decision that patient-centeredness and community-centeredness are sort of the same thing. So it didn't, you know, so it might have been that reviewer one was thinking more on the literal patient-centeredness side, and that somehow that got discussed. So there were fewer concerns, that got resolved. Basically the primary reviewer was concerned that the partnerships were not real. And that was their main concern, and that accounts for, you know, basically all of the poor scores. And I think that there were, you know, members of the Board of Governors that knew these partnerships, mm-hmm. you know, quite honestly, which, you know, probably ended up helping. The secondary reviewer was concerned about methods issues, the possibility of low response rate and long-term follow-up. They're all legitimate concerns, actually. And the third reviewer just loved it because of the strong application of community-based participatory research and all of that. It might be interesting to note that in writing up the grant, we faced a number of options, including doing an entirely new study. And I called one of the members of the board that I know to kind of discuss those options, and he clarified, yes, we're able, you know, we can take it so far, and we'll let you know when it goes too far. And he said, you know, this, we need to have impact within 3 years. There's no way with a new study, you're really, especially with a complex new study, you're going to have that. So, you know, let's get your foot in the door and propose your other idea, which was for the long-term follow-up, which is going to be compelling because they will figure, even if it's negative, you will be able to say something interesting because your initial results were so interesting. So there's going to be something you're going to be able to say, and they'll feel it's like you can accomplish this in 3 years. So the decision was to set aside the idea for a new study, which was one of the criticisms of reviewer one. They said, why aren't you proposing a new study? Anyway, so
I think it helped that we had been presenting material in a partnered way, so that either reviewers or, you know, Board of Governor members and so forth had some exposure. You know, that's not necessarily reproducible, but that helped us, I think. And then I probably, without speaking to someone there, would have proposed the more difficult study. That's more of my nature, and probably would not have gotten funded.
Yeah. And we'll look at some of those comments. Now remember, each person is getting a team of reviewers. There's a stakeholder representative, a methods e-person, and a, what do we call the others? Scientist, right? And you know, you wonder here which was which of them. My first experience in a PCORI meeting was, review session, was there was tremendous heterogeneity. One of the first grants that that we did in our section was, and we ranked them, you know, the highest scoring ones at top, so we did those first, was a grant that had gotten 2 ones and a 7, and it was to measure PCR in an existing blood bank data set with no patient relevant, but two reviewers thought it was fantastic, and the stakeholder reviewer said, you know, what, are you kidding me? And then we all scored outside the, you know, the ranges that were there on this. But I wonder, you know, I think your stakeholder representative probably loved this, and yet that's not good enough. They love a lot of proposals because there's so big a difference between those that get it and those that don't get it. Okay, so here they said you've got a real strong group of investigators, you have these preliminary data, the 6-month findings, a well-designed research plan, empirically examining how the community engagement impacts long-term. These are quotes directly out of the review sheets. Robust, patient-centered, diverse population, hits the mark on all of those, high impact, high priority condition, poor overall success to date, conditions with large disparities, all of these excellent weaknesses. They said potential loss to follow-up. They'll always have that if they want something real, and that there might be changes in the provider over time. And so they said this was a randomized community trial of 2 alternative quality improvements, so we didn't want to get too much into what it was. The secondary comment, this is still the impact review at the end. Potential to impact practice within the next 3 to 5 years. You're going to get a big buck in a hurry about this. Patient-centeredness throughout, continued stakeholder engagement throughout everything. Data collection analysis, they didn't mention right from the start of determining the outcomes of interest, and the choices of your populations as to whether or not they'd want therapy or community-based direction. And a large proportion of the request, large portion of the requested budget is going to the research elements. This was a weakness.
Yeah.
That was the one weakness. They thought the money wasn't distributed the way that reviewer wanted it to be, which would be more like half to the community and half to the researchers.
Yeah, what they didn't understand, and I should have made it clearer, is that the data is co-owned. So most of the budget is data collection. And the community actually considers that to be theirs as well. So if you weighted it by what the community considers to be co-owned, you look much more clear. But I just didn't make that explicit.
But is the implication there, they say, I mean, it's not like the money is an entitlement, that the money should be going to the community. Does that mean that the community is to employ the researchers, or is that their idea?
Well, it could be. I mean, our formula is one-third, one-third, one-third. One third for the data collection, one third for community, one third. So this doesn't quite, you know, get it. Or maybe if I'd shown how we've honored that through a series of grants, you know, why this one has to have so much in data collection.
Right. Tim, what was your dissemination plan? You're saying that you know, these pro forma ones are published in journals and presented in meetings don't fly. So what did you do for that?
Actually, I can't remember what I said. I mean, what we do.
Ken, can we get you to the table? They're complaining they can't hear you. And every word is golden here.
Yeah, right. You know, we have community conferences. We always do direct feedback, you know, mm-hmm. that are large, mm-hmm. and we put that in the budget, and then we have other kinds of dissemination activities, like trying to work with policymakers to get. Mm-hmm. We now have actually done some of that. We hadn't done that at the time I submitted this, but we do have sort of a plan where we, you know, we do community write-ups, we do fact sheets, we have conferences, and then we do work with policymakers to actually try to get services dollars directed towards, you know, the effective strategies.
Good.
Thanks.
What was the third component you said of your allocation? You said to researchers and community. What was the third one?
Data, which is considered jointly owned.
Okay.
And in this particular project, the 80% of the budget or something is for data collection, mm-hmm. or 70 or whatever. And I think that was viewed as academic because mm-hmm. it's the RAND Survey Group, although the RAND Survey Group hires the community, and we forgot to clarify that. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this whole formula that we use.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So what we're hearing people from UCLA saying, well, how can we put our stakeholders...